Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
It's a week of public betas.
A week of the betas going public. Yeah, it is a week of public betas. It's,
you've said the same thing twice in different ways than I said it, but it's
beta
still the same.
Of the public week with the week.
This week, publicly,
where betas.
Betas.
Are publicly. Do you, this is a rhetorical thing, a rhetorical trick that I feel like I use a lot on Clockwise, which is when somebody says something and you haven't prepared exactly, you just restate the question, right? You rearrange some words. And it gives you time.
Yeah, I've noticed in a lot of interviews, especially when there's like executive interviews, that, that a lot of the answers are, oh, that's a really good question. Well, you know, it's like I'm desperately
trying to
think of what to say.
The question that you asked,
yes,
is really this question. It's actually this other question.
That's a good trick.
That's always a good one.
That's a good trick.
Pro tips.
Yeah. I did. So my beneath the waterline of story about the macOS Monterey beta is now above the waterline. All 6,000 words of it, or whatever, posted that yesterday. Ends up, you know, at the end of the day, it's that relief feeling, which is like, I didn't write those words today, but they're out there, and I've discharged my obligation, and the afternoon was really kind of free form and loose because my obligation was discharged. It's kind of nice. Mm-hmm. So you're like, all right, I cannot stress about this now, which is that's good. I had a moment, a little behind the scenes stuff that we do on this podcast. I had a moment where I realized that the public beta was going to come out on Thursday, and it was Tuesday, and I had a bunch to write still, and I sent a note to Roman, our editor at Macworld, saying, hey, can I move my story? And I do this sometimes where I'm like, I can't get it to you today. Can I get it to you tomorrow? And he's like, yeah, it's fine. And in this case, I've got, cause you and I both, skip a week every month. That's our deal with Macworld. So we're really doing 40 weeks a year for Macworld.
Right.
And I had already set up with him that I'm going to skip the next 2 weeks cause I'm going on vacation. And I said, well, could I slide this back a little bit? So I can finish my macOS stuff. And then write you something that you could run late this week or in my slot next week, and this will be my skip. He always says yes. And of course, on Tuesday, he said, actually, we were really hoping that you would be the lead item tomorrow. I'm like, all right, I'll get you something. And so I had that moment where I'm like, all right, before I have this huge thing hanging over me, and I can't get there until I write this other thing. Fortunately, I had already kind of outlined something and had all the notes for it. It wasn't a blank page. And so in about 40 minutes, I was able to get in the column because I had already written some of it and outlined the rest of it. And so I said to him, I didn't write this in 30 minutes, just so you know. It was in a state where it was pretty close to being completed, but I wanted to set it aside.
The ideas are the harder part. The words we've talked about this a lot in the past, but like when you got a really good idea, like that's kind of does a lot of the heavy lifting for you.
I wouldn't say this was a really good idea, but it was an idea for a column.
When you have an idea,
one of 40 written in a year.
Yep, sure. Yeah, they're not, as we've said before, they're not all going to be winners.
Yeah, it's okay. It's fine. I don't hate it. It's one of those things where, actually, more of my reaction was, well, we were hoping to make you the lead tomorrow, and I thought, well, my thing's going to be about AppleScript, so you might not want to,
that draws the clicks,
go ahead.
Let me tell you.
Well, you know, they did their best. They put a good headline on it. And anyway, then I was able to turn to the public beta stuff and start working on that. And that was my, I actually like Monterey, just like the iOS 15 and iPadOS 15 betas. Seems fine. Like other than shortcuts, which is still a little janky because it's brand new and they're still working out the bugs there, clearly. It feels like it's all usable. Some of the new features aren't. New features aren't there. And other new features that are there don't work quite right, including some of the FaceTime stuff and the SharePlay stuff and all of that. Like that stuff is a little bit weird. But like, unlike other betas where if you put it on your main system, I feel like you were just going to be crying all summer. I'm not going to put it on my main system, but it feels more stable, which I like. that's a nice thing. And the new shortcut stuff is great. And I hate Safari. That's the, you know, I spent time with it, and I don't want to rush to conclusions, but I can tell you after all the time I've spent with it, I think they're it's bad. I think their new compressed tab design doesn't make sense on a Mac, which has plenty of space.
Yeah,
and can
you
really
were
afford
more
that pixel.
You were even a little more complimentary or not as against it on the iPad, you mentioned in your piece, which I thought was surprising, because it's not that it's, I haven't used it on the Mac
least
yet, so I won't argue
on,
that.
Least bad
but
on the
still
iPad.
It's still not good.
It's not good on the iPad. Yeah. No, it's not. It's just least bad on the iPad.
Yeah, I've been using, so I installed the iPhone public beta yesterday?
Oof.
2 days ago? Yeah. Safari is definitely the weakest link of that.
Yeah.
Everything else has been fine. I have not had really any substantial problems, and I'm on my main phone because I don't have another phone to put it on. And again, we've talked about this before, you got to live with it, right? You can't, if I have it on another phone, I don't have my stuff. Yeah, I won't use it. So I got it on the main phone. And it's been okay. As usual, the, you know, power consumption is probably a little bit up from where it would normally be, but I, you know, it still made it through a day. But Safari, I'm trying to give it the benefit of the doubt with the muscle memory, because that is a thing that takes a while to change. But man, the tab bar location thing on the bottom.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
I get it. I get why they're doing
it. Yeah, I do, but it's not, it makes one thing easier, which is reaching it. That's literally it.
Yeah.
Everything else about it is worse than before. I hate the way that, that's the least, again, the least bad part, right? Is like, well, if it's on the bottom, I can train myself to like eventually hit the right place with my finger, right? Rather than always looking at the top and being like, where is the address bar? What app am I in?
Right.
But it still has all those issues. Like, you know, why, once I tap it, and you pointed this out, like your address bar flies up to the top again. And it's like, well, if it's there now, shouldn't it always be there? Like, why did you move it only to move it back in this other mode? That strikes me as saying, like, it's just inconsistent. The fact that it covers, you know, content, even on, what's funny to me is even on that start page that you have, mm-hmm. It like, if you have stuff on your start page, it overlaps a bunch of that, which looks weird. It just looks weird. And it's like, this is your own page with your own app viewing it. If even that looks weird, third-party sites are not great.
I mean, what they're trying to do is if you scroll down even a little bit, it pops down to the bottom.
Yes.
And rather than covering, which I say, perhaps it should always be that way.
Yeah, it would always be there, right. But it still won't solve the problem of it going up when you have to type, because the keyboard's got to go somewhere.
Yeah, it's a little design flourish it's actually, and people haven't talked about this as much as they maybe should, this is something that is a new design in iOS and iPadOS, which is these little hovering capsule thingies. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to replace the Chrome that came up, you know, like for the like the quick... whatever it's called, quick correct, I forget even now what it's called, quick type, that little correction bar thingy is now a little floating lozenge thingy in iPadOS 15.
In the iPad, yeah.
And so it's a thing that they're trying to do. And so there are other places, like in a text editor I use on the iPad at this point, that lozenge is there, and that means that instead of it being Chrome at the bottom that pushes up the rest of the text, the lozenge floats there, and it's over text.
And it was always weird with the bar, because like sometimes it didn't display right, and sometimes you could shrink it down by hitting a capsule. And there is a button that sort of minimizes the lozenge in some places.
Yeah,
but
and
I actually
think that the floating lozenge kind of idea, where it's like we don't need to take up the whole row of your screen with UI when it's only this little bit off in the corner. And over time, what will happen is the apps will all be smart about like knowing when where the floater is and avoiding that area with information and all that. And I get what they're going for. But this, then it's applied in Safari, and I look at it and I think, no, on the iPhone. I think the iPhone is the worst implementation by far. I think the iPad is the least worst, and then the Mac is in the middle there. But something that struck me, they added in beta 2, there's a pop-up for switching tab groups on the Mac. And it's there. It previously, it wasn't there when you were not in a tab group. So if you're not in a tab group, you couldn't get to tab groups without you doing a keyboard shortcut. But like in the UI, you would have to open the sidebar and then click in on one of the tab groups. And then you get a little tab group switcher, which didn't make any sense. Well, they added the switcher. So the switcher now is persistent. When you're not in that mode, you still have the little pop-up to go to one of your tab groups, which is how it should be. But it's not on the iPad, so it's very frustrating. Because I don't want to open... I don't want to browse with a sidebar open all the time. You talk about wasting space. You've done all this work to save this vertical space, and now you're going to waste all the horizontal space on a sidebar that's open all the time? I'm just not interested in that. So instead, you end up with this situation where you have to, you know, open it up and tap a thing and then close it up. It's more taps, and then it's just, I don't know. It's a work in progress. They are making changes. I do still believe that Apple internally is not entirely convinced that the Safari thing is going to work right. And that's fascinating, right? Because I think you see somebody, was ATP, had a theory that I think is probably pretty accurate, which is that the engineers on Safari don't like this, but the design group thinks it's brilliant. And so you end up in this position where I think very clearly there have to be factions inside Apple that think this is a terrible idea and have been pushing this idea. And If you're wondering what the big deal is about browser interfaces in June, I think the answer is, or now July, is everybody who writes and talks about this stuff feels like this is the moment where you give Safari a black eye, because if it gets beat up in the press enough, the people inside who've been fighting against these bad decisions will maybe get a little bit more of an upper hand and make the decisions, and try to do the right thing and rethink some of these. Because that's always how it is, right? It's like nobody reads a column we write and go, I've changed my mind. But people do stand up in meetings and go, have you seen all these people who think this is a bad idea? It's not just us. And then they're like, all right.
Ammunition, sure. Yeah, I think it is interesting. You know, they added that thing in, what is it, beta 2, where like if you hover over the address bar in Monterey or on the iPad with a keyboard, the refresh button shows up again.
Yeah. It's very helpful.
Which is, yeah, I guess. But if you're using an iPad and you don't have a keyboard,
not helpful.
Like, yeah, you're out. Sorry. I guess they assume you're just going to do the pull down to refresh thing. And I get it, but like, it's weird.
Yeah, it is hidden, and you have to go up to the top of the screen to do it. So if you're down lower on the page, you gotta do a bunch of scrolling in order to get to the point where you can refresh.
And then you've lost your place if you're reading like a long article or something. Yeah, it's irritating.
Yeah, so I hope they fix it again. You know, I think in general the lesson we learn from betas is that we think that there's an opportunity to change, and it's never as much as you think it is. But occasionally something breaks through. Safari kind of feels like that. I'll just say.
I hope so, but it is tricky when, the thing that strikes me is like that, the issue there is like, you know, you look at the iOS or iPad OS like preview site, right? For you go to Apple site and you look at like, oh, this is iOS 15. Here's all the great stuff coming. And they really do spend some time talking about how great the Safari design is. And it just, part of me knowing Apple and the way they act about these things, part of me cannot imagine them taking a big change, right? Like not in the next 2-3 months. There is the possibility that a year from now they will refine that interface in iOS 16 and be like, and we've made it better.
Even better.
Right, exactly.
By going backward.
But I can't, there's a tacit failure admission if you change it too much from what you promoted before.
It's true.
And I think they struggle with that. So I think they do.
I don't think it matters because it's a beta, and so they have an out. I think they got a real out, which is we are listening to feedback. That's why we do betas. That's why we do public betas. We listen to feedback. We got feedback about Safari, and we improved it, so now it's better, even if what they're really doing is reverting some of the more radical changes that they made.
I'm more skeptical than you are on this one, and we'll see, I guess, what happens. Yeah. But I just cannot imagine them taking a substantial step. I think you could see some tweaks that might make it better, but I don't think it's going to change.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to put the address bar in the iPhone back on the top. I don't think that's going to happen.
I just don't think that putting things on a promo site in June is going to preclude them from doing damage control before this thing gets unleashed on people in September or October.
I can see the logic to that, but I just, again, I think, sometimes I don't think they act entirely out of logic, as these designs show in the first place.
It's true. I was reading John Voorhees' story about the public beta for macOS on Mac Stories, and it was funny because he and I, although we sent a couple of texts back and forth, he and I wrote our stories independently, and we correctly ranked the order of features exactly the same way. It's pretty funny. Shortcuts, obviously, is the big new Mac feature. I think it's going to be great. It's got, you know, there's work to do, and that was the subject of my Macworld column that I wrote that I was trying to avoid writing for a few days, but that I did write, which is there's, you know, really the depth of what remains for them to do, because they do have to figure out what the future of AppleScript, what the future of scripting, and what the future of inter-app communication is on the Mac. And then probably that has ramifications for iOS and iPadOS as well. So there's more to be done, but just having shortcuts. I was thinking about it. There's so many things that I do on the Mac with command line stuff, but that I've replicated on shortcuts. And I was thinking about it, how I really do view a lot of the command line stuff as a last resort on the Mac. And having a more capable tool like shortcuts means I'm probably less likely to resort to running a Perl script or a Python script or running a shell command if I can build it in shortcuts. And one of the reasons is if I can build it entirely in shortcuts, it will work on the iPad and the Mac both. Whereas otherwise, I have to kind of do a, if you're on the Mac, this, if you're on an iPad, that, which is, that's no good, right? I'd really rather make it work on both. And that means avoiding those shortcuts, to shell scripts and things, if I can avoid it. So it's going to be interesting as that product kind of settles to see how I can adapt my own personal stuff to work with it and how well it works. Cause that's still, you know, that still remains to be seen. It's step one, but I'm really encouraged. It's so much easier to use too. Like Automator was, the promise was there with Automator, but it never really executed. It's Automator was missing a lot of stuff, and they never got the resources to really advance it. And every time I would think, oh, I wonder if I could do this in Automator, the answer was I couldn't, because it was like a whole bunch of if then, you know, or like there's all this stuff that Automator, like logic processing of stuff that it doesn't do. Automator is sort of like top to bottom. Run into these walls where you're like, oh no. And shortcuts, branches in all loops and branches and all that stuff that is programmery stuff, but like that you need. It's like, I need a thing that will do one thing if this condition is one thing and this is the other. And Automator, I would just be like, oh, I can't do this. I have to do that in an Apple script or something. So I'm encouraged that I think it's a friendlier interface that's more understandable by regular people. It's really been supported by developers on the iOS side, so I'm hoping that Mac developers will really kind of all pitch in. I know you had Paul Kafasis on Clockwise this week, keeping up our pressure campaign on Paul, that all podcasters are having Paul on their shows to talk about automation so that we can pressure Paul into putting automation in all the rogue
Amoeba
tools.
He was the one who chose to ask about automation, so I take that as a good sign.
I welcome Paul to our pressure campaign on Paul. Welcome, Paul.
Self pressure.
Thank you. This week's Six Colors sponsor, Rogue Amoeba. Thank you for sponsoring Six Colors. Now put automation in your Mac apps. Thank you.
I was talking to him at some point too about off air about, you know, current solutions for automation on the Mac. And, you know, we've all relied on like third party tools, and there are some, you know, really powerful keyboard Maestro and all that stuff. But a lot of it is clunky, and a lot of it is like, you know, it's workarounds, right? Like I am frankly. You pointed out, I think, at some point that Keyboard Maestro has that thing where it can like find a button on a screen, like an image, and like that's incredible. It also should not be necessary, but it is incredible.
Right, well, yeah, it is. Well, this is what I was sort of saying about the shell scripting too, which is I view it as a last resort. Like it's amazing that you can resort to it and get it to work. And I think Peter Lewis has done amazing work over a very long time on Keyboard Maestro. Like I think that it's got my phone's ringing. That's exciting.
Oh.
I have all these beta devices and they're not all set to turn off.
Mm.
And so they chime. It's really annoying. Hey, everybody. I've known Peter Lewis a long time. Keyboard Maestro is a good app. It's got some interface issues that drive me crazy, but I really like it. But yes, I it's not, it existing is not enough of a reason for there not to be better built-in automation, especially because as brilliant as it is that it can do some of these things, not only is it not very clean, because I have to do, you know, you have to do a lot. You don't know, Keyboard Maestro doesn't know about the state of an app. And so you end up having to do things like, you know, open these windows, close these windows, open these windows again. Is the window there? Kind of these really weird contortions you have to do to get things in the state that you can trust. And, you know, it would be better if I could just say to the app, hey, can you open this window?
Right.
So it could be. So here's my Keyboard Maestro macro that I have set up to open the right recording block in Audio Hijack, which is activate Audio Hijack. If there's a menu item with the name Close All enabled, then choose Close All. If there's a menu item with the name Close enabled, then select Close. Then press Command 1. Now wait until the front window is called Audio Hijack. If the screen contains an image showing the right thing, but it's been selected for some reason, and the text selection is showing, and that's matching the image, it's actually looking at the screen, press Return, which unselects it. If you see the image that is the block that I want to select, again, I'm looking at the image, then take your cursor. And your cursor literally moves on the screen, which is also very disconcerting and not great, but it's what you have to do. And click on that image and then choose Open Session from the menu item. And then what happens then? Once it can open, wait for the Open Session menu to be available, then choose it. And then once the block that I'm trying to open opens in the foreground, then it types Command 1 to bring the menu of all of the items to the foreground and closes it, and that's the end of the action. And it works. It opens the right thing, and it's the only window that's open, but it's ridiculous. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, I had this very basic thing I was trying to do at some point where it opened, like, oftentimes when I'm doing a podcast, I open everything in a separate desktop. Because like, oh, I just need these apps for this, so I put in desktop. That's barely even scriptable with Apple Script. Like, so the most effective way is to tell it to, like, essentially issue the keyboard command to do the mission control and then click the, like, image to add a new space. And I was like, how is this the most efficient way to do this system-wide feature?
Yeah. So, anyway, Shortcuts is going to help. And it's the start of a process. And it also sends signals to people like Paul that this is, that Apple's actually making an effort on this stuff. Whereas before it was like, do we do Apple Script? Is it going to go away? Like, because it's, you don't want to put a lot of effort into doing old technology that has not been touched in a long time, because it's probably going to die. So why would you do it? And so now they've got a path where they at least have some, I feel like, confidence that this stuff is not going to be wasted effort and that people might actually use it. And I'm encouraged by that. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I know that they're also being prompted by stuff like Stream Deck, which really does require kind of automation. And that's they've got apps that really would work well with Stream Deck. And so I know that's interesting, because a lot of Stream Deck automation ends up being like URL based, which is the old school way of doing it on iOS.
Right.
But it works. Like I think I mentioned on this podcast that's how I've got my buttons on my Stream Deck to turn my lights on, is that I have an app on my Mac that accepts URLs to control them, and it just fires off URLs at this app, and the app launches and switches the lights on and off. It's very clever. It's not elegant, but it works. So, I don't know.
No, I agree with you. I think there's a lot of possibility there. I'm very excited for this to be a thing. So,
and then focus mode was number three on my list, which again spans all the devices.
I just don't know about focus. I've been using it a little bit, but here's my thing on focus.
All right.
I think it's, I imagine there are a lot of people for whom this will be great. And my problem for it is that mainly it's so fiddly for me. It's too much work to the overhead to set it up. I don't have enough different contacts I switch for. Like, I saw people being like, oh, I could set up a thing where I only have my work colleagues or only have my friends talking to me. I'm like, those are the same people for me.
Right,
It's like, Jason, you cannot text me when it is past 5 o'clock, right? Like, that's not going to work. That makes no sense for me. So there are things that I like. For example, I set up the fitness one so that, because this was a thing that I actually did think was a big deal. And I was like, when I heard about this, I was like, oh, great, this is exactly what I want, which is sometimes I go for a walk in the middle of the day. And invariably, even if it's been extremely quiet all day so long, that's when like some of my thread, like message threads start, like people send like 8 messages and I have the Siri thing on because it announces it and it's just like constantly interrupting my music. It's like, oh, there's literally a thing when I tell it, like I'm starting my outdoor walk workout, essentially go into like do not disturb except for a handful of people for, you know, the emergencies or whatever, and then turn it off when I stop my workout. I'm like, that's great. I really am a big fan of that. But I thought about like other focuses I was creating. It's like, oh, I could create a podcasting focus, I guess. But like, again, a lot of the things that I do when I'm podcasting are things that I'm always doing. Like, I don't need to silence notifications when I'm podcasting as much because it's like, well, my phones are always on silent anyways. I do need some notifications to get through. Can I pick just like the handful of people? Is it always the same handful of people? Like, I want my wife to be able to text me. I want my mom to be able to text me, right? Like, I think there are some people who will find this great because they love to set up those like very specific use cases. For me, I don't think there's enough delineation in the different modes I'm in to warrant like the work of going through and picking like, these are the apps that can bother me. These are the people that can bother me. I just don't think it necessarily makes sense for me, but it's clever and I'm glad that it's customizable.
I'm surprised that you haven't talked about the one use case that I think might be the best for us for focus, which is I'm writing right now. Mm-hmm. The idea like that you can do it, and it's not even necessarily you can do it until you turn it off, but you can actually just say, I'm going to block out the world for an hour.
And, so I'll tell you why.
And I have been experimenting with that and I kind of like it, although it does have, you know, it does have issues where you're like, well, yes, but sometimes the most distracting people in my life are also the people that I have to allow in case that they need to reach me.
Yeah. So here's the issue, Jason. I think for me, fundamentally, that's not a technological problem. That's a me problem.
Hmm.
Even if the stuff is silenced, it's far more likely that I will get distracted and decide I want to check what's happening on Twitter. I don't think technology can help me with that.
I thought you were going to say, that's my secret. I'm always writing. But
I'm always distracted. That's my secret.
I see. Well, I mean, for me, basically, I have a certain level of like on the iPad, because I do a lot of writing on the iPad. I have a certain level of notifications. And I've got apps telling me things and all of that. And it's fine. Slack's telling me things and, you know, everything's telling me. And that's where I've found value in it, is saying I'm writing now. All that stuff just doesn't, it gets accumulated, but it isn't there. So I'm not writing and get a news update or a message in a, you know, who's mentioning me in a Slack that I don't need to know right this minute. So that's, I found that valuable on that level. Now, I think there's more that needs to be done there. But I think that there, at least for me, I see some potential in that of saying, you know, I don't want my iPad to be that quiet all the time. But there are times when I do want my iPad to be that quiet. And if I can say, it reminds me a little bit of, remember Freedom, that app that basically kills your internet?
Yep. I tried to use it for a while. It just made me angry.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. I found that quitting apps was actually pretty effective, that like on the Mac, that if I just quit apps, then I have to launch them and that was it.
Yeah.
But it reminded me of that in the sense that it was kind of saying, okay, iPad, don't bug me so much for the next hour while I focus on this. And that worked okay. And the fact that it goes across my devices, so it's not just the iPad, but my watch is not going to buzz me about that thing too. It's just everything's going to be quiet while I'm sitting there in the backyard, and if my family needs to reach me, they can reach me, but like a random phone call is not going to distract me, a news headline's not going to distract me. I can be just a little bit more focused. I think that there's some potential with that one.
Yeah, again, it's not a feature I'm dismissing for everyone. I think it's just, it's something I've struggled with, and it's something I've tried other things. Like, I've tried, like, the, you know, like, screen time limits on some of my social media apps. And more often than not, I just end up being, like, frustrated when I go to those apps, and I'm like, ah, no, never mind. I want to see what's going on there. And so, again, I think it's, for me, a lot of that ends up being a matter of my self-discipline more than the technology tools that are available to me. So that's the struggle I have with trying to figure out how to configure these things to work for me. And a lot of times I think it just ends up not being as worthwhile. I need to, like, if a notification pops up, it's more about me ignoring it than it is about, or me triaging it and quickly being like, I see what that is. It's not important enough for me to deal with now. I'll deal with it later. Than it is to have a technological tool that doesn't show it to me in the first place. But everybody's mileage differs, and it's great. I'm glad that the option is there, and I'm glad that people who will get a lot out of that will get usage out of it. It just may not be a feature for me.
And also, I would say that people who are not us have much more of an issue with work-life balance. Where the borders are, well, and I don't mean that we don't necessarily, but I mean, our, like you said, our borders are not clearly defined where there's the work life and the home life. And I can see scenarios where that actually really makes sense, that like, I'm going to shut out work now, which, you know, Lauren used to work with somebody who was very diligent about that. Like when she was off, she was off. And there's something
the
to be
problem,
said for that.
Yeah, it's funny because so our work life thing is, I think it's just very porous, right? Yeah. And that is because our work and life, personal lives have a lot of overlap.
Yeah.
I think of the opposite, and it's not quite the opposite. That's what's weird about it. I think of my wife, who works a very, like, you know, important job, and she is literally, if not on call basically all the time, it is not at all unusual for her to get a call at 10 o'clock at night about something. And her life is porous, but like in the other direction, where it's like the work always bleeds into the personal life. Where
and there are
and that's a struggle too.
There are people whose jobs are like that, but there are also people whose jobs are not like that or should not be like that.
Absolutely.
And you've got this message that comes in. I'm thinking of, like, I don't want my email notifications from work to bug me when I'm off of work. If you have a job where you can, where you don't have to do that, you should be able to shut that out.
Yep.
During that period of time, and say, now I'm not going to do this. And I don't know. It'll be, as with so many of these features that Apple has been trying to do to improve people's lives, the truth is that all Apple can do is take a shot at building a framework and then see how people use it. I mean, this is where we can't wait to see what you do with it has some really specific meaning. Which is that they actually need to see what you'll do with it. And sometimes I think, as with, what's it called? It's the thing that I never use, the screen time.
Screen time, yeah.
Screen time, I think, is a failure, at least as far as I can tell, because it never has worked particularly accurately for me. It's always kind of bumped into problems and weird things that just make me frustrated and make me want to turn it off. But, like, I think that's one of those cases where they thought that they could address some of these issues, and I'm not sure whether in the end Apple was like, "Oh, we've decided not to." Or
well, they made a big deal in some of WWDC this year. There's an API for it now, so that is
great.
You know, tells you maybe the answer is we decided we're going to provide a basic solution so that we can at least point to when people are like, our devices are too distracting and we can't limit our kids like doing things. Oh, we've got that. And the answer is, but if you need more, there's third parties that do that job, and maybe you should use one of those.
Maybe.
So, like, table stakes is what it sounded like. But
I guess what I'm saying is that they don't know a lot of this stuff. They're like, we should do something. Let's try this. And then you just have to see. And so focus, I think, like, screen time is going to be one of those things where it's like, it's an interesting idea. Are people going to use it?
Yeah, and I think the best case, absolute best case scenario for it is actually that it could, like, feed back into culture, right? Like, if people notice, like, oh, nobody ever responds to my work emails after 5 p.m. anymore because I get notifications that they're not paying, you know, that they're in a different focus or something. Maybe people stop sending emails past 5 o'clock. Like, that's the holy grail right there, is the, like, maybe we actually as a society get better about things like personal and work-life balance. But I don't think we can put that all on Apple.
What else? Anything else this week?
I've been playing around with, I mean, I've just been playing around generally with a lot of the public beta features because I'm writing some stuff for another publication and just doing freelance. And, like, I was just playing with the live text and visual lookup, which are very interesting when they work. Live text, you talked about your recipes a couple weeks ago and doing that. I think it is interesting and kind of amazing. So I had, like, I was testing it out, and I have this, like, manual for a fan that we bought, right? Like, and it's just a huge block of text, and, like, there's the ability to just insert text from your camera Which is wild. So like I, you know, literally was like, well, I opened a note, I tapped insert text from camera, I pointed my camera at the page of the manual, and it just went and like put it all down there. And it was anything that is like printed text, it seems to basically be, if not 100% accurate, very nearly 100% accurate if it is printed text, especially if it's like, you know, the good angle, you know, just sort of like you're pointing your camera at something. Right. Handwriting is a lot dicier.
Oh, yeah.
But it is still not bad at like certain types of handwriting. In general, I think it's just, it's a cool feature. It's kind of bananas for like, you know, it's simultaneously both a thing that I'm like, this is amazing that this exists. And also, yeah, I guess that makes sense. Visual lookup, similarly, I have found that to be an interesting feature. I'm not convinced how good it is at everything it's trying to do, but it's a start. I had a thing where I was kind of had a moment where it claims artwork is one of the things it can identify. And I was like looking around, you know, I like Googled some pictures of artwork. It's like, oh, Starry Night, you know, it's like, yep, uh-huh. Identify that. And then I tried to do, there's the famous woodblock, The Great Wave. That's like the tsunami wave by the Japanese artist. And it just didn't recognize it. Even when I was like on the Wikipedia page, like opening the image, and I was like, oh God, is this going to be an Apple, like Apple's artwork canon only recognizes Western artwork kind of situation? Cause that seems like a potential issue. I don't know. I haven't tested it enough yet. But it would not surprise me at all to learn that it is certainly biased towards Western artwork because that is the sample they're training it on. But we'll see how that goes. But it was cool to be able to go, like, I went back to, like, my pictures from India, and I have a picture of the Taj Mahal. And it's like, yep, that's the Taj Mahal. This is where it is. Here it is on Wikipedia. It's like, all right. I mean, I know it's the Taj Mahal, right. But it's cool that it knows that, too.
Yeah, I can see the value in like, what building is this? And you know this stuff's only going to get better, right? And it's like auto-recognizing that where you are from things in the background and stuff, and based on the geotagging, it's like, that's this building or whatever. I took a spin through its animal breed recognizer. Yeah. And it's terrible.
Yeah, it's not great.
Every cat is a bobtail because yep, cats very rarely have their whole tail exposed in a photo. And the dog breeds are all over the place. And also kind of wishy-washy where it would be like, my dog, it would be like, it's a boxer or a bulldog. It's a boxer or a French bulldog. It's a boxer or a pit bull. And like, and other dogs, similarly, it was like, unless you are at the Westminster Kennel Club, it's not going to really be that accurate on what kind of dog it is.
Well, because most dogs are mixes of different dogs.
Well, that's also true, right? Like, so I don't know. I looked at that and I thought, this is something that somebody thought would be a fun thing, and it's actually not useful at all. And I
wanted
like
one
it.
For, I'm disappointed. I don't think it does birds.
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't that be great if you could take a picture of a bird or just hold your camera up to a bird and it'd be like, this is what the bird is? Yeah. That's going to happen. I think what's interesting about all of this is that all is...
camera for that.
That's all going to happen. Yeah, you probably do. But also, it's just
you're mostly too far away.
But if you get a decent shot of a bird and it knows where you are and it knows what time of year it is, having some sort of machine learning-based thing that's going to be able to say what kind of bird that is. Like, we have iBird. And Lauren will sometimes do that. We'll be out and we'll be like, okay, let's go through, and you tap through and you're like, oh, we saw a bluebird on our hike a couple months ago. And it is a bluebird. It is actually a bluebird. We found out what it was. We got it a match and we're like, oh, because we don't normally see that bird. So it does happen, but it would be better to just do ML to do that.
Right. There's an app called Merlin that is backed by my alma mater, which has a big ornithology program, and it's great. It's really cool. But it would be, you can easily see the difference between the, like, how big is the bird? Where was the bird? Like, what colors was the bird? Versus, like, what if I could just show you the bird and you tell me what kind of bird it is?
Dear Six Colors subscribers, you, of course, if you haven't read that article, it's available on Six Colors.
That's true.
It's a members-only article from 2019 about Merlin bird ID.
It's a good app. It really is. I have to say, I absolutely love that app. Cool. It's very cool.
Good job.
More than anything, those features to me are kind of shots at Google saying, like, you know, we know Google has been doing this kind of stuff for a while and we want to prove that we have skin in this machine learning game, and like we are contenders. So we're going to throw stuff like that in. I mean, the translation obviously is another place where they've like kind of taken a shot at that. I think it's also pushing back against sort of the conventional wisdom, right, where everybody's like, well, Google's so good at this because it has all our information and it's, you know, like scans all your stuff and it knows everything about you, right? And Apple's trying to make the argument, look, you can have a lot of these features and not sacrifice those privacy. Here is us doing it. Right. And in most cases, I would argue it's maybe not quite as good as Google's, but you know what? It's not bad, and it'll only get better. And I think that it's smart of them to put that kind of stuff in there because it not only makes people rely less on the tools that Google has to offer, but it provides sort of just a strategic bullet point for them too. So it's interesting stuff.
Yeah. Well, we got the summer to play with it now.
And I'll throw in that my Macworld column next week is about all the apps that Apple didn't do any substantial updates to. So look forward to that because there are a few. If you feel like mail or calendar hasn't changed in about a decade, you're not wrong.
I got that whole section at the end of my piece that's basically like all the things that Apple chose not to do, like make mail more interesting or calendar and fix notification center and widgets.
Yeah, there's a lot. App. I mean, you can't do everything every year.
You can't.
I understand. They have more and more stuff, like it gets harder, right? Because you can't. You cannot devote all the resources you need every year to updating every single app that you have. But when you see some that have like year after year, basically no update, then yeah, now maybe you start asking questions about why you're not focusing on that at all.
We'll find out.
Yep. All right, folks. That's it for this week. And who knows what's going to... We're on vacation next week.
That's right.
So
no show.
I don't know. I mean,
short show.
We could do
formal show.
Yeah, we'll see. But if you don't hear from us, it's okay. We'll be back in 2 weeks for sure. Sure. And instead, we're gonna go on vacation. Not together. It's not that like work life balance does have its place.
We're not there yet.
No. I don't want to go where you're going, and you don't. Well, you do want to go where I'm going, but that's okay.
That's true.
I'm closer to where I'm going than you are.
We're going to different oceans.
We are.
We're in the beach, but different oceans.
Different oceans.
This ocean ain't big enough for the two of us.
That's right. Damn right. All right. Thank you, everyone out there, for listening as always. And until next time, whenever that is. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.